Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 226 event, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we lost one unit for UFC Fight Night 132, on our free bet, which was underdog Felipe Arantes. Back to the present, UFC 226 features an 11-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. And also, before we get started, the Tough 27 finale is tonight, so we'll be doing a very quick pick bit on that at the end of this podcast. So stay tuned for that if you are interested in our picks for that event. Now, kicking things off for UFC 226 is a women's strawweight bout between Jamie Moyle, who is 4-2, and Emily Whitmire, who is 2-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Moyle opened minus 350, the comeback on Whitmire at plus 250. And right now, look at our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu. Make sure you guys check them out and give them some love. Right now, over at BetDSI, it's Moyle minus 200. The comeback on Whitmire is at plus 160. So needless to say, the dog got slammed there with action coming in on Whitmire. And I can understand it because minus 350 in a matchup that's going to be competitive is definitely a high opening line, and the price on the dog had some value and probably still does have a little bit of value. I understand that Whitmire is not going to get a ton of respect. If you look back through her resume, pre-tough, it's not an impressive one. What she accomplished on the show wasn't overly impressive either. And then coming out and losing her official UFC debut. So, you know, there's some things not to really be too fond of from Whitmire. So I understand where, you know, the opening line might come out a little bit higher, but she is better than she's shown so far. And again, she's going to get better. And that tough experience has definitely improved her game as a whole. And I expect her ability on the feet with her striking, with her wrestling, and with her submission game to improve as well. Now, Moyle, we know that she's been a little bit more battle tested, of course. I mean, she's been, you know, a veteran of Invicta cards, which she's fought really solid competition throughout Invicta, and she's performed respectively for sure. Even on the Ultimate Fighter, she was okay. Since then, you know, she ended up, you know, coming on and beating, Curran and then losing to Pereira, as of late in her last fight as well. But she's had some mixed results is what I'm trying to spit out here. But at the same time, you know, you could see what she's made of. She's a tough girl. She's a little small for the weight class. This is 115 pounds, we should mention, by the way. But she's a little short still, even for that weight class. But she does bring it. She's aggressive. She has some pretty good striking. She likes to take the fight to the floor at times as well. She has a pretty solid ground game. Not really the most dangerous at latching on to a submission. She has that in her, but more so getting position, dropping some ground and pound on the ground as well. So, you know, I could see why Moyle is the rightful favorite in this spot, but still, I think it is a dog or pass situation because realistically speaking on the feet, it's going to be pretty close. Whitmire is going to have some length. I think Whitmire can do a little bit of damage on the feet. She doesn't really like to play that game all that much. She likes to go straight in for the takedowns, get the fight to the floor. Whitmire does. And then once she's on the floor, she does have some good ground and pound. She does have some good offensive submission skill as well. So my problem here in this spot is Moyle, she's kind of like a punching bag. You know, she is aggressive on the feet, but she gets tagged up so much and she has that skin that kind of breaks open and she gets cut open easily or she swells easy as well. So if this fight stays up and it plays out on the feet for a little while, even though Moyle is going to be the aggressor, she does walk into some punches. So I think Whitmire can have some success on the feet. I think Whitmire actually could probably get top position on the ground as well and possibly pull off the upset win over Moyle. So I'll go against the grain. I think that, you know, again, from a betting perspective right now where it stands, there still might be a little bit of value on Whitmire because I'm expecting if it does hit the scorecards, it's going to be a split decision type of fight. If not, if there's going to be a finish inside the distance, I don't think it's going to be Moyle. I think it's going to be actually Whitmire maybe latching onto a sub along the way offensively. Now, she does have to get better defensively with her, especially her sub defense. But again, Moyle isn't really the type of fighter that's going to exploit that all that much. Whitmire does have to give her some respect on the ground, but again, that's really not what Moyle's going to probably go after here. And I think Whitmire is actually the more dangerous fighter. So I'll go with the dog in this spot here. And I think Whitmire is going to probably open up some eyes and surprise a few people and get her first solid win in the UFC here.
My problem with Whitmire is if she gets this win, it would not just be her first solid win in the UFC. I think it'd be her first solid win of her career. I mean, she went 1-4 as an amateur, I think, or 1-3. She went 1-1 on the show, and then she lost her UFC debut. She's not that impressive or skilled, in my opinion. I mean, she has a little bit of takedown ability, a little bit of striking ability, but she is massively flawed in terms of submission defense. Striking defense isn't that good. I don't think she pushes that high of a pace. I'm just concerned about her overall. I know that she fought at flyweight on the show, but she moved up to flyweight for the show. She's a natural strawweight, so I don't think that she'll have any major significant advantages over Moyle physically. Moyle is probably going to be the stronger fighter physically. Moyle does push a better pace on the feet. And even though Whitmire, you know, might be able to clip Moyle along the way, Moyle, even though she can, you know, bleed, she doesn't get hurt in terms of, getting staggered or anything. I think she can walk through Whitmire striking. So I see Moyle getting the better of Whitmire on the feet. And honestly, Whitmire isn't that good of a grappler either. I mean, she has a little bit of submission ability, but Moyle has dealt with that. And Moyle has a little bit of wrestling herself. She's actually pulled off a takedown in the UFC and held some top position. So I think if anyone gets top position in this fight, it might be Moyle, who is, I think, physically stronger and just a little bit better center of gravity. So I think this is Moyle's fight to lose. She is coming off a 13-month layoff, so I'm a little concerned about that due to some injury time and rust. But I just think Moyle's the better fighter here, and I think she gets the job done and probably ekes out a decision. So Moyle's my pick. Moving on, we have a lightweight contest between Dan Hooker, who is 16-7, and Gilbert Burns, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Hooker open -160 to come back on Burns at +120. Right now, looking over BetDSI, it's currently -125 for Hooker. The comeback on Burns is at around -105. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, more dog action coming in Burns' way. This is kind of an interesting fight, a tough fight, because the way we've seen Hooker perform as of late, I mean, since he moved up to the lightweight division, has been phenomenal. I mean, the guy has definitely improved his confidence. He's improved his game. His striking looks better. His wrestling looks better across the board. I mean, it was definitely, it looks like it was a smart move to move up to lightweight and just keep on working and grinding. He's getting better. So he's kind of working up that ladder, and he's had some pretty impressive wins. I mean, you know, I understand in his last fight, the win over Miller, that KO was beautiful, and it was an aging Jim Miller. But still, I mean, how many people, they're capable of finishing Jim Miller, even, you know, if he is on the decline a little bit? Jim Miller's tough as nails, so it's not easy to get rid of a guy like Jim Miller. So that's the kind of fighter Hooker's become. I mean, I think he's, again, at an all-time high with his confidence right now. Everything's flowing his way. This is a tough matchup for him, though, in Burns. And you could say a lot of the same things that I just said about Burns as well, because he's been on it more of late. I mean, his last loss was against Prezeris, and Prezeris, we've all seen what kind of a tank of a man that guy is. Outside of that, though, Burns' win over Sago, which was impressive because, I mean, obviously we all know what Burns' strength is, and that's on the ground. I mean, if this guy gets you to the floor, I don't care how good your jiu-jitsu is, you're in trouble. I mean, Burns has an elite level of submission skill on the ground. We all know that, but he's been winning fights by knockout. So he's getting a little bit more confidence on the feet, and he's developing a little bit of knockout power. And of course he does train with some good strikers. We know that as well. So it seems like all that stuff is rubbing off, and it's starting to work for him. But again, in a pure striking matchup against Hooker, I don't think that's the way he wants to go. I mean, I think pure knockout power, Burns might actually have a little bit more one punch knockout power. I think Hooker is the more diverse striker and he's the better striker overall on the feet. And I actually like his chin a little bit more as well. But I don't think these guys are going to be knocking each other out. I think it's going to play out where Hooker's going to be stuffing and trying to defend some takedowns along the way. Burns's wrestling isn't where you'd like it to be for a jiu-jitsu practitioner. It's okay. He can get the takedowns and he has when he needed to at times, but typically speaking, I mean, he doesn't have that wrestling that's going to blow you away. So it'll be tough for Burns to get the fight to the floor, but I think he eventually does that. And once on the floor, I mean, again, even though Hooker's a very capable grappler in his own right, there's a world of difference between the two here. And I think Burns is going to probably latch onto a submission and get the job done. You don't want to fiddle around with Burns on the ground all that much. So for me, I think it's going to be competitive across the board in all areas and all aspects of the game here. But I do like Burns getting the submission win potentially on the ground. If he doesn't submit Hooker, if they do spend a lot of time on the ground, I'd be surprised if he doesn't get the submission win over, over a guy like Hooker. But outside of that, then he might lose a decision on the scorecards or even might, you know, get caught knocked out. Like I said, I don't think that's the case though. I think what we do, we see a competitive fight and Burns eventually finds his opening on the floor and gets the job done. So the pick is Gilbert Burns, probably by submission.
I'll admit that if Burns does win, it is going to probably be by submission because I don't think he can beat Dan Hooker by decision. If Burns can get this fight to the floor and keep Hooker on his back, then yeah, he's got a decent chance, but will he actually be able to do that? Hooker has pretty good takedown defense at 76% and Burns's takedown accuracy is not very good. So, I know that Burns has looked better in recent fights, but he hasn't been fighting very good people. I mean, he's been fighting guys making their UFC debuts on short notice and stuff. So I know that now that Burns is facing somebody that's pretty legitimate, I think we're going to get see another test because the last time Burns was tested, he did not really pass it. Now, Dan Hooker, as Nick mentioned, since he's moved up to the lightweight division, he has changed his fighting style a little bit, and he's been extremely effective in terms of really punishing veteran opponents. I mean, he has faced some very talented people, and he's finished all three of them at lightweight, including Ross Pearson and Jim Miller, guys that are established lightweights in the UFC. So I think here, while it'll be tough for Hooker to get a finish, if he does get a finish, I think he could knock Burns out. But again, Burns is talented and, the problem with Burns though is while he has improved his striking, I don't think that it's at the same level that Hooker's is. Hooker has improved dramatically in that department. He's not quite as much of a brawler anymore. The brawling style actually got him into a little bit of trouble when he was at the featherweight division. But since moving up, he's a little more composed, a little more technical, and he mixes things up really well with knees. He's actually had two finishes from his knees. So I think that Burns could, you know, if he's shooting from distance in this fight to try to get a takedown, he could get kneed right in the face and that could be lights out. And then Hooker does have the reach advantage as well. So I think Hooker should get the better of Burns during striking exchanges. Realistically, the only way I see Burns winning is if he gets takedowns and gets top position and keeps Hooker on his back and then eventually finds a submission because I don't think he can hold Hooker down long enough to win rounds through takedowns, just through takedowns. And I think Hooker is powerful enough and dangerous enough that if Burns is screwing around too long on the feet, then he could get himself in some serious trouble and eventually get finished or at least get outpointed enough to lose a decision. So I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to pick Dan Hooker. Now, kicking things off on the Fox Sports 1 prelims is a welterweight contest between Curtis Millender, who is 15-3, and Max Griffin, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Milliner open minus 190, the comeback on Max Griffin at plus 150. And right now looking over at BetDSI, it's minus 170 at BetDSI. The comeback on Griffin is at plus 140. So Milliner's still a solid favorite. Line margins have tightened up. A pretty decent opener, it looks like. I mean, staying about ballpark where it opened. It is a tough one. I mean, Milliner definitely deserves to be the favorite coming into this fight with all the hype and all the, you know, skill surrounding him as of late that people have got to see. I mean, he's been getting some pretty solid knockout wins under his belt. I mean, including the performance against, I mean, Thiago Alves. I know, again, another aging veteran in Thiago Alves that Milliner made his successful UFC debut against, but it was still impressive. And again, before that, you look at some of the wins he's had as of late. I mean, Milliner's been on it. I mean, he's getting better. He's always been a prospect in many people's eyes, but now he's starting to put things together. His kicking game is on point. I mean, he's become a very long and dangerous striker is what it comes down to. And especially that, again, highlighted by his kicking game more so than anything else. So he's dangerous to deal with. Now, Max Griffin, though, on the other hand as well, a lot of people were surprised what he was able to do in his last fight against Mike Perry. Mike Perry, a very hyped fighter in his own right. And Max Griffin was able to go out there and beat him by decision and, you know, deservingly so too as well. I mean, a lot of people would figure Perry would have success, possibly even knock Max Griffin out. Cause if there's any, I think, kryptonite to his game, he's a little chinny. I mean, he gets rocked. He gets wobbled. I mean, you know, his defense lets him down at times and you could see that in him. But at the same time, I think maybe, you know, we underestimate Griffin, obviously, because he has a really solid skill set. I mean, he's a well-rounded fighter. He has some good striking. Again, he proved that in the Mike Perry fight. He also has a little bit of wrestling to go along with it. He's just a complete MMA fighter that is getting better. And that win over Mike Perry definitely boosted his confidence to another level. So he's going to come into this fight here against Milliner and obviously have all sorts of confidence going for him as well. So you have two confident fighters that are really good strikers, that are pretty well-rounded mixed martial artists that are going to go out of here, and it's going to be a fun fight. I think it's going to be competitive. I could see it realistically going either way. So even though Milliner's a rightful favorite in this spot, I do think it's another spot where it's a dog or pass situation. I wouldn't lay the chalk on Milliner here because, again, Griffin, I think, is just a probably the more complete fighter of the two. I think Milliner, even though he's getting better with his takedown defense and his ground game as a whole, I still think that he's a little bit vulnerable there. And if Max Griffin does decide to wrestle, he does have some wrestling in his game as well. If he decides to maybe get a timely takedown or two along the way, then we could see him get some top position and do some work on the ground as well. Now, it might not play out that way because, again, Griffin's falling in love with the striking a little bit, obviously. He's had some success doing so. And Milliner likes to stand and bang as well. So it probably stays up upright more so than not. And if that's the case, it'll be a firefight. And I'm going to slightly lean with Curtis Milliner because of that reason. But as far as a betting, you know, what's worth a play here at the betting window, I would definitely say it's a dog or pass situation. So I wouldn't lay the chalk against Griffin right now. See how this fight plays out. Because I do think that maybe we're showing Milliner a little bit too much respect and we need to see him maybe notch a couple more wins under his belt as he moves up that ladder, you know, in the UFC. So we'll see where it's at. This is definitely another good test for him because, like I said, I think Max Griffin is definitely a little bit underrated and his win over Mike Perry has proved that he's a solid fighter in the welterweight division and he can pull off some decent wins. So this will be another one if he gets it. But I'll go slightly lean a little bit more towards Milliner's way here. And again, I just hope it's a fun fight because I think this has potential to be one of the better fights on this card.
Yeah, how exciting this fight is will be depends on how Milliner engages Griffin. Griffin is a little bit more of a brawler. He likes to get inside, even though he does have the same reach as Milliner. I don't think that he fights that same style. Milliner likes to fight long. He has a great kicking game, really dangerous, has great straight punches. Griffin, he throws more of hooks, steps inside, and lands with power. So how this fight plays out, I think it will almost certainly be on the feet the whole way, unless somebody gets knocked down or trips or something. And then Milliner should be getting the better of Griffin. I think Milliner is just the better overall striker. I think he fights long. He has that ability to keep Griffin at the end of his jabs and kicks. And unless Griffin can force this into more of a phone booth fight and engage Milliner on the inside, then I think Griffin's going to be in some trouble. Griffin has already been outstruck and outwrestled in previous UFC fights. And I think Millender is definitely capable of outstriking Griffin along over the course of three rounds. I'm not certain that Millender can finish Griffin. He does have the power to do it, but Griffin is very tough. But I definitely think Millender is capable of winning this fight. I mean, he's just a more dynamic, diverse striker that can hurt Griffin while he's trying to wade in and make this fight more of a brawl. And unless Griffin can make this a continuous brawl and land something with really good power on the inside and hurt Millender, then I think Millender, it should be his fight all day. So my pick is going to be Curtis Millender. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Lando Venetta, who is 9-2-1, taking on Drakkar Close, who is 8-1-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Venetta open -245, the comeback on Close +175. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's -185 for Venetta. The comeback on Close is at +155. So another spot where it opened a little bit too high and action came in on the dog. And another spot where I think there's still some value in the dog as well. It's going to be another tough fight. You have two lightweights that love to push a high pace, that are capable strikers, of course, capable wrestlers as well. This is going to be a fun fight. I mean, in my opinion, Venetta, you know, when he made his short notice UFC debut against Ferguson and he performed so well, a lot of us were automatically thinking, man, this guy is something special, because he did have that kind of prospect hype about him before he entered the UFC as well. I mean, you know, training at a great camp in Jackson's, having a wrestling background, and then the ability to strike that he's shown overall. I mean, talk about a diverse striking set. I mean, he could knock you out with his feet. He's got some really good kicks, obviously. He's got some good punches. He's got some power. He's got some speed, unorthodox striking that works for him. And you tie that in with his wrestling and a bit of submissions to go along with it. He's a pretty good complete fighter. But what I don't like about Venetta is he's a little bit too hittable. He does have some movement, but at times, I mean, his defense, again, it's one of those situations where it doesn't hold for him. I mean, and shots get through, he gets busted up. He has what I was talking about with Moyle. I think Venetta's even worse in that regard, as far as getting marked up. His face swells, cuts easy as well. So even if he's not getting lit up, I mean, his face does show the wear and tear as it goes. So I think Close is going to be the type of fighter that's definitely going to keep the pressure on him for all three rounds if Venetta doesn't get him out of there. And Venetta does have a tendency to slow down in round two and round three as well. So that's why I think if this fight hits the scorecards, it's going to actually favor the underdog Close here in this spot. And I do think that Close is tough enough that he probably does not get finished by Venetta either on the feet or by submission. So more than likely that we do see this hit the scorecards. And if we do, I think it's going to be another very competitive fight, another split decision type of fight. So that's why I do think there's probably a little bit of value on Close as the underdog here as well. So should be a good one. Again, I think if it stays on the feet, Venetta is the better overall striker. He probably has, obviously, the better wrestling to go along with it as well. I mean, Close did get taken down by Tamer. So if I was Venetta, I would try to explore that option a little bit more than anything else, is trying to, you know, obviously start the fight on the feet and then try to look for some timely takedowns. Close does have some pretty solid takedown defense, and I think he got caught a little bit off guard in the Tamer fight, because Tamer is obviously more known for his striking skill more so than his wrestling. But so I think his takedown defense is going to be a little bit more solid here in this matchup. But that is, like I said, a path to victory for Venetta. If he can mix up his striking, get a couple timely takedowns, then maybe he can steal a decision on the cards. But outside of that, I think he's going to have to keep his foot on the gas. And in round two, typically he slows down. And I think Close will keep that pace up enough to steal round two and possibly round three. So my pick is going to be Close to pull off the upset win over Venetta.
And I'm going to come in the other way. Obviously, this is a very close fight, but I like Venetta. I think that he has the better overall striking. I think he has more power. I think he has good enough takedown defense to fend Close off when Close is trying to get this fight to the floor. And while Close does have some pretty solid fundamental boxing, Venetta can mix it up really well. So when these guys are exchanging, I expect Venetta to get the better of Close, although I do think Close will have his moments. But Venetta has more power. He has a more diverse striking attack. He can spin. He can do a lot of crazy things. He has a lot of confidence in his striking. But Venetta has also been unlucky. I mean, he almost finished Tony Ferguson in his UFC debut, but it didn't work out, and then he ended up getting finished. Then he pulled off one of the most exciting finishes of the year against John McDessie, and they immediately throw him in there against Tamer, and he loses. So, you know, he's 1-2 in the UFC, but he's faced very good competition, and he is still very skilled. So I think what happens here is Vanetta does get the better of Close in the first round for sure. I think that he can steamroll Close in the first round. I don't know if he can get the finish or not. It's possible, but I do expect Vanetta to get the better of him there. And then in the second round, I think Vanetta will eke it out because he's going to start to slow down. And then the third round, Close will probably win that round. But I don't think that he'll have done enough in the first two rounds to make up for it. So, and Close, I don't think has enough power to put Vanetta away. I just have not seen much out of his finishing ability. I mean, he's faced some guys that he definitely should have finished, and he just didn't do it. So, I think Vanetta wins the first two rounds and then holds on, even though he probably loses the third. So my pick is going to be Lando Vanetta. I think he wins a decision, although it's going to be close. And if Drekar Close can really turn it up late, he might be able to pull this out. So, but my pick is going to be Vanetta. Now dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Rafael Assuncao, who is 26-5, taking on Rob Font, who is 15-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Assuncao open minus 270, the comeback on Font at plus 190. Right now looking over at BetDSI, it's Assuncao minus 180, the comeback on Font is at plus 150. So another spot where it opened a tad high and the action came in on Font as the underdog. Of course, this is another spot where I think kind of, I don't want to say changing of the guard, but you have a savvy vet that's been at the top of the food chain in title contention for a long time in the bantamweight division. And Assuncao that we all know what we get out of him. I mean, the guy performs at a high level every time out, and he's faced the best of the best competition out there. So I think we're kind of used to that, and we're looking for some new blood. And the way the UFC matches fights up sometimes, it is a situation like this where you have, again, the savvy vet that's been on top of the food chain for a long time versus a guy that has showed some promise, some prospect potential coming into this fight. And it's a guy like that is Rob Font. I mean, I know he's had, again, kind of – I don't want to say up and down. I mean, I believe he's 3-2 overall in the UFC, but I mean, his loss to Munoz and Lineker, the Lineker fight to me was the most disappointing, because of the way that kind of played out. I mean, you had a kind of a striker versus striker matchup, and I was surprised he was as tentative as he was. The Munoz fight, I can understand how that played out a little bit more, but again, but also Font has had some success and his win over Almeida in his last bout was pretty solid. And again, he's got confidence building in his way. He's got some power. He's got some length to go along with it. He's got some pretty decent, takedown defense at times as well. Now he's going to need it here because I think Assuncao is the more complete fighter. So if he's feeling like he needs to maybe get this fight to the ground, he might shoot in for a takedown and try to have an easier time or try to rack up some points here as well. But even on the feet, I think this plays out interesting because again, Font is more known for his striking and more known for his knockout power, but Assuncao is probably the better technical striker as a whole because of his movement. And it's just hard to get a gauge on him, it's kind of pin him down and land stuff on him as far as, again, his unorthodox but technical striking skill goes for Assuncao. We've seen that time and time again. So I think Assuncao can outpoint Font on the feet, but Font is definitely going to be the more dangerous one punch knockout artist here in this spot. So Assuncao has to be careful. And my concern here is, I mean, we're getting to the point where, again, Assuncao has been around for so long, even though he's looked pretty good as of late. I mean, he hasn't shown signs of a decline yet, but eventually that's going to come and you just don't know when that's going to hit. And it could be a fight like this where Font ends up clipping him, knocking him out. And then we see, unfortunately, Assuncao heading in the wrong direction the rest of his career. So that is a concern in the back of my mind, because you just never know when that time is going to come when these guys do hit that decline spot and all of a sudden it's just quick and it's rapid. So I am cautious about that with Assuncao, but I still have to pick him because I do believe that he is just the better overall fighter in this spot. So another hard one to bet, I mean, you don't want to lay the chalk, and I understand the people that gobbled up that plus 190 on Font compared to what it is out there right now at like plus 150s or something. You definitely got a little bit of value, and there still could be some left here as well. But as far as a pure pick goes, I think you have to side with the better fighter across the board, and that should be a Sun Tzu. So I'm going to pick a Sun Tzu to pull off the win here.
Yeah, a Sun Tzu is just so consistent. He has won 10 out of his last 11 fights for a reason, and he's done it against some extremely talented opponents. He eked out the decision over Dillashaw, which Dillashaw did avenge. That's the one loss that he's had. But Sun Tzu has been a bit of a prospect killer, too. I mean, there's been time and time again the UFC has just thrown prospects at Sun Tzu thinking that, you know, because Sun Tzu is near the top of the division, this is how a prospect could establish themselves. And time again, Sun Tzu's turned him back. He did it with Pedro Munhoz. He did it with Aljamain Sterling. He did it with Marlon Moraes, who is one of the top contenders right now. So I think Rob Font, as talented as he is, as powerful as he is, I just don't think he's ready for Sun Tzu. Sun Tzu is extremely technical on the feet. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He has very tight striking defense, almost 70%, which is unheard of. So he's tough to hit. He pushes a decent enough pace on the feet. And while he does have a little bit of power, he doesn't throw at full strength very often because he's trying to keep himself composed and measured and find those openings. And he doesn't leave a lot of openings. Now, if he gets the fight to the floor, Sun Tzu should have a big advantage against Font. He has a very strong ground game, solid top position, good control, some submission ability. So Sun Tzu should have the advantage almost everywhere except pure punching power and reach. Now, Font does have 5 inches in reach, and he is the more powerful overall fighter. He has finished several guys in the UFC, and if he can connect on a Sun Tzu's chin, I mean, a Sun Tzu is getting a little bit older. He's 35 years old, so there is the potential that Font could end this fight, but a Sun Tzu is durable. He's been in there against elite strikers time and time again, and he's been coming out the other way just fine. The Dillashaw fight went to decision. Marlon Moraes went to decision against him, and those guys have been killers in bantamweight. So I think that Rob Font is going to have his hands full here. Sun Tzu can mix it up and take this to the ground if he wants, but I think on the feet, Font will have his hands full too. Even though he's the longer guy, he doesn't really fight that long. He likes to get in and land with power on the inside. And I just don't think Sun Tzu is going to leave that many openings because he is so tight and crisp with his technical ability on the feet. And that defense is rock solid. So I think Font is going to get flustered just like good prospects and other talented fighters have been time and time again when they've stepped in there against Sun Tzu. And I see Sun Tzu probably winning a decision here. So Sun Tzu's going to be my pick. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a middleweight contest between Uriah Hall, who is 14-8, and Paulo Costa, who is 11-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Costa open minus 290, the comeback on Hall plus 210. We were talking about dog action coming in pretty much the pattern so far up to this point. Well, not here. This was the opposite completely. So it shot up from minus 290 from Costa. Right now, the line over at BetDSI is currently minus 400. So it went from 290 to 400 here with the bettors out there laying the chalk in this fight. And I understand that as well. I mean, I do get it. This is one of those situations where we're talking about some young blood coming in against the proven veterans in the sport. This is definitely a fight that the UFC is kind of making to feed, you know, Uriah Hall to Costa, in my opinion. I mean, you have a striker versus striker matchup here with Hall being a definitely a respectable opponent for Costa because he is dangerous. I mean, the guy has knockout power. We all know, you know, the Ultimate Fighter reasoning behind all that, where Dana White said he's, you know, possibly the next Anderson Silva or whatnot. He's had hype. Uriah Hall has had hype for a long time, but unfortunately for him, it's been pretty tough. I mean, he is capable of landing a knockout punch. I mean, he proved it in his last fight, which he much needed to get a win over Jocko. And the way he went about it, getting the knockout, was impressive. So he needed that. But before that, he got knocked out by Musasi. He got knocked out by Brunson. He just hasn't been the same type of fighter that we're used to seeing. So that decline spot seems to be hitting Uriah Hall as it is. So after he comes off a win, to throw him to the wolves in a fight like Costa makes a lot of sense as far as matchmaking goes, because Costa has the ability, the look, the feel, the, you know, the kind of fighter that you can definitely market, and especially where the middleweight division is right now. I think that you can push this guy towards a potential title shot eventually. You know, obviously we all know Whitaker's a champion, and outside of the top three or four guys, I mean, there's some new blood that needs kind of fed, you know, up to those guys a little bit, because we can't keep seeing Whitaker fight Romero time and time again, even though there's some classic battles. So this is kind of new blood that's making a case for himself here that says, hey, look, you know, I'm a middleweight, undefeated. I have a ton of knockout power. I can strike with you guys. I mean, that seems to be the trend, right? A lot of these guys have good takedown defense, which Costa does, and can strike and knock you out. Which, you know, that, again, that's kind of the upper tier guys in the middleweight division right now all have that. So Costa would be a nice addition to get in the mix and possibly earn himself with another win or two after this, a potential title shot at middleweight. I mean, that's kind of the path he's heading on. And I think he's probably going to make it to that spot. If he's careful though, I mean, you cannot underestimate Uriah Hall. In fact, this is a spot right now where the line is. I personally would not touch it. I wouldn't lay 4-1 over a knockout artist like Hall, because even though I don't think he's going to win this fight, and I am going to pick Costa to win, I think Costa's aggression, his power is going to be a little bit too much, especially with the state of Uriah Hall's chin right now. I don't think he's going to be able to take what Costa dishes out. But with all that being said, is it worth laying over 4-1 on? I don't think it is. I think you kind of stay away from it. Again, another fight that we know probably ends inside the distance relatively quickly. It is probably Costa doing the damage if it does. So I'm going to pick Costa to win. But again, from a betting perspective, I would just stay away from it at this point. You know, like I said, I don't know if I would go out on a limb and say it's a dog or pass situation, but I would just at least stay away and watch the fight and have fun with it more so than anything else. But it's hard to bet at 4-1 with Costa here, even though I do think he gets a W. So the pick is Costa, and more than likely, like everybody, most of us thinks, he probably wins by knockout.
Uriah Hall has had this type of matchup before, and it usually doesn't go well for him. You know, he's the type of fighter that needs a little bit of space. He has tremendous power, both in his hands, his legs, his kicks. So if given some space, Hall could definitely finish this fight. That being said, Paulo Costa is the type that just does not give his opponents space. He pushes a tremendous pace, gets right in his opponent's grill, and just tries to take them out right away. He still never had a fight go past about a minute and a half into the second round in his entire career. He's gone 11-0 and finished everybody. So I think that probably happens here. I mean, Costa pushes forward, will throw a ridiculous amount of strikes, and I just don't see Uriah Hall being able to withstand it. Hall has been in that position before against Derek Brunson, against Chris Weidman, where they just pressured him and took him out. So I think that's exactly what Paulo Costa does. You know, just Hall does not handle fighting defensively well when he's on his back foot, and that's exactly what Costa is going to do to him. So unless Hall can catch Costa as he steps forward, I think Costa just makes him wilt under the pressure and eventually finds a finish, probably in the first round. Hall's dangerous, but I just think that Costa is more dangerous. So, especially with the way he's landed 8 strikes a minute, which is just absurd. And I think that he just keeps that pace going. I mean, this guy seems like an unstoppable wrecking machine. And until he faces somebody that can stop that ridiculous forward pressure that he has, then he's going to keep winning. And I just don't think Uriah Hall is the type of fighter that's going to be the one that stops it. So my pick is going to be Paulo Costa. Now moving on to the main card, we have a light heavyweight contest between Gokhan Saki, who is 1-1, and Khalil Roundtree, who is 7-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Tough line to set here, especially with all the hype that Saki has coming into the UFC, and it's a striker versus striker matchup. So with that said, Saki opened minus 180, the comeback on Roundtree at plus 140. And right now what we're seeing is Saki at minus 130 at DSI, and the comeback on Roundtree is even money. So line opened a little bit high, but again, I mean, I think that's understandable here because it is not an easy line to set with, again, hype sometimes is tough to gauge as far as public perspective goes. And this line has dropped down some. And the reason behind that, I think, it makes a lot of sense as well. You do have, like, as I mentioned, a striker versus striker matchup. And obviously, Saki is the more proven striker. I mean, coming from K1, from Glory Kickboxing, he's fought the best strikers in the world. And the guy's had a ton of success. I mean, he's an elite striker. There's no question who the better striker of the two is here in this striker versus striker matchup. It is Saki. But this is not a kickboxing match. And you have to, even if it was, I mean, you always have to respect a guy like Roundtree because he can strike and he does have some power. But I'm saying it's not a kickboxing match because we've seen a little bit of flaw in Saki's game already. Now, it's not fair to really judge him based on that UFC debut, but he hasn't had a ton of experience in MMA, and that's what we have to go by right now. And as of this point, he got an impressive win over Henrique da Silva in his UFC debut, but as at the end of that round, it was getting sketchy for him for sure. I mean, he had his moments in that fight where I wasn't sure if he's going to pull it out. And as the fight progressed a little bit, I mean, you could see his gas tank emptying and it wasn't looking good for him. But again, he did what he had to do. And right before the fight ended in that first round, well, right before the first round ended, I should say, he got the job done and got him out of there. He wasn't able to, you know, do what he does best and knock him out. So you got to respect that from Saki. And I'm sure that he went back and worked on his conditioning, his cardio, and he should be a better version of himself stepping in here against Roundtree. But with that said, Saki is coming off an injury. He was already supposed to fight Roundtree. I believe it was back at UFC 219. I'm not sure if his conditioning can improve all that much. And if that's the case, if Roundtree can survive that first round, I really do believe in round two, if it gets that far, it's going to be a tough fight for Saki. And I think Roundtree could probably knock him out. And maybe even towards the end of round one, we see it happening again, playing out that way. So I'm just not that confident in Saki's ability right now in MMA. I mean, Roundtree at least has more MMA experience. Of course, he's a striker. Like I said, he's got that striking experience as well, but he's been in there. He's been three rounds. You know, his conditioning at times to me bothers me as well, Roundtree's, but he's proven that he can go three and, you know, and Saki has not proven that yet. So, I mean, all fighters tend to slow down as the fight progresses, but some just can't get that cardio right. And unfortunately for Saki right now, I'm believing that he's maybe in that group that he might not ever have great MMA cardio. And that's a shame because he is one of the best strikers that's ever graced the octagon, you know, thus far. So I don't know if we're going to get to see that kind of striking out of him, though. So with all that said, until he proves to me that he can go deep in round two or round three and his cardio can hold up, I can't really pick him right now in a striker-striker matchup because Roundtree does have a little bit of an experience edge. So I am going to pick Roundtree to beat Saki and probably knock him out towards the end of round one or possibly in the middle of round two or something like that. Around that time frame, I think, is where the fight's going to end up ending. So I can't believe I'm saying it because I'm a big Saki fan, but I think Roundtree probably is going to be too much, and we might see Roundtree knock Saki out. So that's my pick.
I'm going to come in the other way. I know that Saki looked a little scary in that UFC debut with his conditioning, with his defense. They weren't that impressive. But one thing you got to remember is Khalil Roundtree Jr., he fell off in terms of his conditioning in his last fight as well. I mean, he started relatively strong, but taking on somebody in Michael Oleksaychuk that was not that talented, Oleksaychuk just took that fight over and ended up winning. Also, Khalil Roundtree, his striking defense is bad. Like, he's dangerous, he has a lot of power, and he is a good striker, but his striking defense is 40%. That's atrocious. And going in there against an extremely accomplished K1 killer of a striker in Gokin Saki, that's scary. I think while Roundtree has shown pretty good overall toughness and durability, I'm nervous about Gokin Saki's power connecting on Roundtree's chin. Even though Saki did not look particularly good in the UFC debut, especially against somebody that didn't have a very good chin and isn't that talented of a striker, I think that he will turn it around a little bit. I mean, he is... Gokin Saki is one of the best strikers that's ever transitioned to the UFC. And I think that he'll be in a decent position here. Now, Khalil Roundtree Jr. is capable. I mean, he knocked down Tyson Pedro. He's picked up some quality knockouts in his career. He has some really good explosive power. But unless Saki just completely wilts again, which I don't think he will, because Roundtree's not going to be attempting takedowns. I would be absolutely floored if that happened. So I think Saki can just focus on the stand-up and he'll be okay. I mean, he wasn't gassing in his kickboxing bouts. Not really. So, since this is more or less a kickboxing fight, because Roundtree's not going to be attempting takedowns and Saki almost certainly isn't going to be attempting takedowns, then I think Saki can just focus on the striking. And because remember the last fight, he was having to defend takedowns and maybe that got him tired. Focusing just on striking, I think Saki will be able to find a home for that right hand or left hand or maybe a kick. And I think Khalil Roundtree Jr. is just not going to be able to withstand it, especially considering that having faced way worse strikers than Saki, his striking defense is still so bad. I think that Saki finds a home, and I think that he puts Roundtree away in the first round. So my pick's going to be Gokin Saki. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Michael Chiesa, who is 14-3, taking on Anthony Pettis, who is 20-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Chiesa opened -150, the comeback on Pettis at +110. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's currently Chiesa at -160. The comeback is at +130. So line margins have tightened up. Line opened back up where basically it settled the last time when the fight was pulled due to the Conor McGregor bus incident. We won't go beyond that, but... So that's where it closed, and that's where it came off the board. So it was kind of an easy line to put back up there, and it seems to be a solid spot as well because it is an interesting fight. I mean, really how this plays out, Chiesa is going to probably come in and try to utilize his wrestling and his takedown game and his submission game and get Pettis to the floor, because in the past, when we've seen Pettis struggle, it's been against guys that can take him down, avoid his submission game, and just kind of grind him out and outpoint him that way. Now we've seen a different version of Pettis show up the last few fights, because I mean, the decline is real. He's bounced back from dropping down to featherweight back up to lightweight. And although he got that win over Jim Miller, when he did bounce back up to lightweight, I mean, his last fight against Dustin Poirier again is one of the best lightweights in the world. We know that, but it was still disappointing to see Pettis perform the way he did. And basically, you know, the injury that happened late in that fight, that's not the Pettis that we're used to seeing. There's definitely a lot of signs pointing to a serious decline in Pettis's game. So I think Chiesa has a big advantage here because he probably will be able to get this fight to the ground. He has to be careful and cautious about that guillotine choke that obviously Pettis can get you with, triangle chokes, some arm bars. He has to avoid all of it. I think he can, and he knows what to expect on the ground from Pettis a little bit. And I think more so than anything, he needs to really watch out for that guillotine choke. I think he will stay out of the triangle and submission or the triangle armbar trouble here. And then if he does take Pettis's back, I think Chiesa could actually submit Pettis. And Pettis has some pretty solid submission defense, so that's not going to be an easy task. But anybody, I think if Chiesa gets your back, I mean, it's going to be tough to keep that guy from choking you out. So that's just the type of fighter Chiesa is. So I think Chiesa can win this two ways. I think he can get Pettis's back along the way in a scramble and possibly choke him out. Or I think Chiesa could probably do enough to grind out Pettis and win maybe at least 2 out of 3 rounds in this fight and win. Now, Pettis does have some path to victories. I mentioned his submission skills. I think that guillotine choke as Kies is shooting in is a possibility, but on the feet, Pettis is definitely the better striker. Again, I know the decline spot I just mentioned. I even think his striking isn't what it used to be already, but he still has a significant advantage in pure striking skill over Chiesa. And if he's able to keep this fight upright and keeps his distance and some space, he will probably pick Chiesa apart and probably look good doing so. So Chiesa has to come out here, fight smart, get the job done. I think he does that. And to me, the UFC seems to be pushing Chiesa as well. I mean, they're involving him in a lot of projects that they're doing. You see him in the forefront a little bit more. You know, I mean, he was even on this last episode of The Ultimate Fighter, you know, making a quick appearance there as well, talking to the guy. So Chiesa's definitely in good standing with the UFC, and I think this is a great matchup for him to keep on climbing that ladder over, you know, I mean, a guy that was on the cover of Wheaties, for crying out loud. In the UFC, that's the popularity of Anthony Pettis. So this would be a great win on his resume. So all the signs are pointing to a Chiesa win for me. And as long as he doesn't get, you know, caught up and fight smart, I think he will probably get the job done here and beat Pettis. So my pick is Michael Chiesa to win either by decision or possibly by rear naked choke.
Anthony Pettis just hasn't been the same fighter ever since Rafael Assuncao, took away his title. And he takes too much damage. He backs up too much. He gets pressured too easily. He goes towards the fence too much. And he just gets hit too much. It just has not been impressive at all. The drop to featherweight was a disaster. And then moving back up to lightweight, yeah, he got a win over an aging Jim Miller. But then he faced somebody legit like Dustin Poirier, somebody that I thought that he would probably have ran through when he was at his peak. And he just got smoked by Poirier. Poirier just overwhelmed him and then put a hurting on him and forced him to wilt and lose via, I believe, a rib injury or something in the second round. So, you know, that is just the Anthony Pettis that we have now. And I'm surprised that he's even ranked in the top 15 at lightweight, to be honest with you. You know, Michael Chiesa at this point is just a much better fighter than Anthony Pettis. Pettis might have more technical striking skill, but Chiesa is going to be the one pushing the pace, moving forward, forcing Pettis to be on his back foot. And then once they close the distance, Chiesa is going to be shooting for takedowns. And Pettis just does not have the takedown defense to stop that. Eddie Alvarez got him down. Dos Anjos got him down repeatedly. And then Dustin Poirier took him down 5 times. And Poirier, I don't think, has as good a wrestling as Chiesa or top position and submission ability. So I expect that Chiesa is just going to repeatedly dump Pettis on his back and then eventually either force him to wilt from strikes or work for a submission. I know that Pettis is dangerous. He has arm bars that he can throw out from his back. He has triangle chokes. He has a guillotine choke if Chiesa's careless, but as long as Chiesa is protecting himself, you know, this is a guy that's just massively motivated and still on the rise compared to Pettis, who is, in my opinion, on a pretty steep decline. So I think Chiesa's catching Pettis at a perfect time, and I think that he's going to look really good against him, and I expect Chiesa to get a relatively one-sided victory here. So my pick is going to be Michael Chiesa. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Paul Felder, who is 15-3, taking on Mike Perry, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Perry actually opened minus 270, the comeback on Felder at plus 230. That's not a mistake. I mean, he opened almost 3-1, and the line flipped since then with a lot of action coming in on Felder. Obviously right now over at BetDSI, it's minus 155 right now with Felder as the favorite. And Perry, you get a comeback of plus 125 as the underdog here. So even though Felder is moving up in weight, the betting action has come in his way. You know, I mean, it's a given why people are betting this fight right now. I mean, Felder is, it's a striker versus striker, and Felder is the better striker. He's a better mixed martial artist in this spot here. Of course, we all know the amount of hype that Perry's had. I mean, it's been pretty amazing, really, to see how much respect, I mean, from the beginning, from his UFC debut, that he's getting. And it's because of his fighting style. I mean, the guy has knockout power. He's a warrior. He's tough as nails. He comes and he brings it, man. I mean, he's definitely a dangerous fighter. You cannot underestimate or take lightly. I mean, he's proven that time and time again with some of his knockout wins already in the UFC. So he's capable of putting out your lights any moment. I mean, that's the kind of fighter Perry is. And he is going to be a strong fighter here. And again, Felder is taking this fight moving up. Now, of course, Felder was already scheduled another bout. There was some switcheroo going on here, of course, as well. Like as far as matchups goes, that's why Felder actually offered to step in here and, you know, as a replacement and fight in the spot, because I think, you know, he thought to himself, hey, I need a fight. Perry needs a fight. This is a good position for me to be in, fighting a guy that is known for being a knockout artist, and I can outstrike him. So I'll step up, even if it's up a weight class or whatever. I'm in good shape and I can get the job done here. And I think the betters out there believe so as well. So he is the better mixed martial artist. I think he is the better striker in this spot as well. He's more technically sound. I think he's a smarter fighter. And I think he should outpoint Perry and route to a decision win here. So I do think the action that came in and that gobbled up that +230, any plus money that you were able to get on Felder was the right way to go for sure. And as of right now, I think it's a lot more accurate of a line, obviously settling in around 150 or so, because you do have to respect Mike Perry's power. He's going to be hungry. You know, unfortunately for him, he's coming off of two back-to-back losses. So he's going to want to get, you know, back on the winning track here against Felder. And it's a possibility. Like I said, I mean, you can't count the guy out, but I don't know. I just think that it is going to be a little bit of a tough spot because Felder is the better fighter, and I don't think he's going to get it done. So this could be three in a row as far as losses go for Perry. And we could see him cut. I mean, from a guy that we thought would potentially keep on improving and maybe get into a title shot pitcher to being possibly cut with a loss here, it's kind of a head-scratcher. But hopefully that's not the case. Even with the loss of Felder, I'd like to see Perry stick around because he is an exciting fighter, and he can get better and improve and kind of work his way up the ladder if matched properly as well. But for right now, I do have to side with Felder because he is the better fighter, and I think he is probably going to show that in his fight against Perry as well. So the pick is Felder to win. I think he always has a shot to knock people out, of course, either one of these guys, but I think it's more so on the scorecards by outpointing Perry, like I said, than knocking him out. Perry has shown a pretty solid chin, surprisingly, because I did have my opinion on his chin before he came to the UFC. I didn't have my confidence, I guess you could say, in Perry's chin. But since he's been in the UFC, that's changed my mind. I mean, he's taken some shots. He's absorbed them well. He's tough as nails, and he's not a guy that's just going to wilt under pressure. So he's going to be a tough guy to stop for Felder. So I think Felder probably wins on the scorecards.
And I agree. I just think Paul Felder is the more technical striker slightly than Mike Perry. I think he's a little bit more diverse. Perry does have more power. And with Perry being a natural welterweight, that is a bit concerning because Paul Felder is stepping in to take this fight on short notice. So I'm a little nervous about that. Even though Felder is almost the exact same size as Perry, I mean, he was a large lightweight. So, I mean, he's going to be only giving up 1 inch in reach. He's actually going to be an inch taller than Perry. So I think that he'll be overall fine in terms of the size, but Perry will be a little bit stronger. And Perry definitely has more pure one-punch power. Perry can mix it up with his hands, with his elbows. He has a bit of a kicking game, not too great. I think Felder's kicking game is better, obviously. And Felder is the more overall technical striker. But what really impresses me with Felder is how much he's improved his overall game. I mean, just listening to him during some of his commentary, I mean, this guy is an extremely intelligent, cerebral fighter. And he's added some nice ground game overall. He's improved his wrestling, his submissions. So if for some reason the stand-up isn't going as well as I think it should for Felder, he can mix it up and shoot for takedowns. Perry is not that great in terms of takedown defense. I think that he can be put on his back. So I expect that if Felder wants to mix things up and just try to keep Perry honest, he can shoot for takedowns. So at in this fight, while Perry is going to be extremely dangerous and capable of finishing it with a big spinning elbow or a heavy hook, Felder is durable. He can hang in there, and I think technically he can outpoint Perry on the feet and then mix things up enough with takedown attempts and potentially putting Perry on his back to steal one. I think that Felder is just fighting at a very high level right now, and he's catching Perry at the right time, even though Perry probably is motivated with his back on the wall a little bit. But I think Felder is fighting at such a high level that he can fluster Mike Perry, and I think he gets the job done. So I'm picking Paul Felder by decision. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the heavyweight division, we have Francis Ngannou, who is 11-2, taking on Derek Lewis, who is 19-5 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Ngannou open -230, the comeback in Lewis +170. Right now, looking over BetDSI, that is not the case any longer. Right now, we're seeing Ngannou at -365, the comeback on Lewis at +285. So, line margins have tightened up, and there's action coming in on Ngannou at the price. Now, that's another tough one to set. I mean, Lewis definitely is a guy that you have to respect his knockout power. I mean, he's shown that time and time again as well so far in the UFC. I mean, his win over Tabura in his last fight was very impressive. It got him back in the mix in possible title contention. I mean, if he beats Ngannou here, I mean, he's going to have a rightful case to possibly get a title shot upcoming, even though not too long ago, he lost to Mark Hunt by knockout. So it's amazing because overall he's been pretty consistent, and he's the type of fighter that you can, I mean, he's got so much heart, he's got so much toughness, and he's got so much power that you can't count him out. And if he gets top position on anybody, I don't think he's going to get it on Ngannou. We know that he drops bombs and he can put you out. So Derek Lewis is a dangerous fighter. But with that said, Ngannou is just the better athlete. He's the better striker here. He's got more knockout power. He is a beast. I mean, he kind of got taught a rough lesson in his title shot against Stipe Miocic. I mean, you know, Stipe was just a smart fighter. I mean, the game plan that he had coming into that fight worked to perfection. And I mean, he's just obviously head and shoulders above the level Ngannou is right now as far as IQ and everything else. So that's a completely different matchup. So with that said, I think Ngannou went back to the drawing board. He realized that, look, you know, my cardio let me down more so than anything else in that fight. I mean, I was getting held up against a cage. I was getting taken down. Stipe was just controlling me, smothering me. I don't want to be in that spot again. So he's definitely been working on that conditioning. And this is a 3-round fight, obviously, not a 5-rounder as well. So that kind of bodes well for Ngannou. I don't think it's going to go all 3, obviously, but still, I think he can just kind of let it fly a little bit earlier. If it gets in round 2, round 3, though, if this fight does manage to get in that spot, it is going to get interesting because, again, that's when it seems at times when you see a guy like Lewis step it up and be even more dangerous. So Ngannou has to be very careful if it gets that far. But outside of that, I think Ngannou probably, with that speed and that power, catches Lewis's chin and puts him out. I mean, Lewis has been knocked out in the past, and with a guy that has as much power as Ngannou does, I don't think his chin is going to be able to absorb that kind of punishment here. So I think Ngannou gets him out of there probably by the end of the first round, and he just kind of, you know, it makes another highlight reel case for himself to possibly get another title shot soon. I mean, if he, outside of Stipe, I mean, he's basically, you know, beat most of the guys in the heavyweight division that are relevant. And I think that if the guys that he has not, they're going to probably feed to him before he gets another title shot, or we could see another title shot soon. And again, if it's DC, that's going to be interesting. If DC will get in that fight next, but if Cormier does pull off the upset over Stipe, then, you know, we could see Ngannou and DC right away as well. That'll be interesting. So it could play out all sorts of different ways, but the bottom line is, I think Ngannou is a better fighter than Lewis, and I think he should get the job done here as well. So Lewis is dangerous, but I don't think he's on the same level, even though he has more experience than Ngannou. I think Ngannou right now is just the better athlete and the better fighter as a whole. So I think he's going to probably get the job done here against Lewis. So the pick is Ngannou. Would I lay the chalk at -3.5-1 over Lewis? Absolutely not. You stay away from this spot. I think all the value got sucked out with all the people betting that -230 up over 300. So you just kind of stay away from it. It's a dog or pass situation at this point, probably. If you expect Lewis to hang in there and survive past round 1, then maybe take a stab at the dog. But outside of that, stay away from it, watch it, and hopefully we see a fantastic knockout because it has all the makings in that way. So the pick is Ngannou by knockout.
I'll keep this one pretty sweet and simple. Francis Ngannou is one of the scariest fighters on the planet. I know Derek Lewis is dangerous and powerful, but Ngannou has the reach. He has the power. He has pretty good, relatively good takedown defense. I mean, he did stop Curtis Blaydes, but he couldn't stop Stipe. So I'm a little nervous about that. But unless Lewis can take Ngannou down, stay on top of him, and then just pound the hell out of him from top position, I think at some point Ngannou catches Lewis right on the chin, and Lewis does not have the durability. He got knocked out by Sean Jordan. He got finished on the feet by Mark Hunt. And I don't think either of those guys hit even half as hard as Francis Ngannou does. And if Ngannou lands with just one nasty punch, I think Lewis's lights are going out. And I think Ngannou is motivated. He's pissed off. And he wants another crack at the belt. And this is his campaign to get that going. And I think that it'll get off to a good start here because I think that Derek Lewis is going to get finished violently. So my pick is going to be Francis Ngannou. Now this brings us to the main event of the evening in the heavyweight division. We have the UFC heavyweight champion Stipe Miocic, who is 18-2, taking on the UFC light heavyweight champion and former Strikeforce Grand Prix heavyweight title winner, Daniel DC Cormier, who is 20-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Stipe Miocic opened -170. The comeback on Daniel Cormier at +140. The line skyrocketed up, and Stipe got over 300 at one point. In Vegas, it was actually kind of trending up towards almost 3.5-1. But now as we get closer to fight time, the action is coming back in on Cormier, and we're seeing the line drop back down. So from -170 went up over 300, and right now over at BetDSI, it is currently -230 for Miocic, and the comeback on Cormier is at +180. So two action coming into this fight. There are some books that did get heavier on Cormier out there, quite a few of them actually. Even when the line was kind of creeping up, a lot of spots were still heavier on the dog a little bit too. So the market price kind of drove the market up a little bit too much, and now we're seeing it straighten itself out a little bit. And I'm sure some of these sports books are going to get some buyback on Stipe, believe it or not. See, and that's the thing. A lot of people believe that they could tell how much action books are getting by the way the line moves. That's not always the case. A lot of times it is, but not always the case. And this fight here, it's definitely intriguing because different books have different action and they're heavier in different spots. So I think this is an awesome fight. We have champion versus champion here. Both of these guys are quality fighters. And from a sports book perspective, you don't really want to stick your neck out on a limb big time because both these guys are, I mean, they're championship caliber fighters. So how can you lean heavier one way or the other? Now I know in this fight here, Stipe has the size advantage. He is, I mean, a big heavyweight with power. He's proven time and time again. I mean, he's the best heavyweight of all time. I mean, he's broken the record that was set. You know, he's got the title defense record. Obviously, he's proven that he's a warrior. I mean, a lot of people counted him out against Ngannou in his last fight. Again, with the fight IQ, with the toughness that he brings to the table, and with the knockout power and with the confidence Stipe has, I mean, he legitimately is probably the best heavyweight of all time as far as the UFC is concerned. I mean, he is just an awesome fighter, a warrior, and he deserves it. I mean, he's just a class act. Cormier, on the other hand, is one of the best all-time fighters I've seen in MMA as well. I mean, the guy, let's not forget, he did fight a heavyweight, and the reason he bounced down to light heavyweight, really, he's a short guy. We all know that. He's not a tall fighter. I mean, that's why he's outsized here by Stipe as well. But outside of that, Cain Velasquez was dominating the heavyweight division at that time. So, you know, I mean, that's his training partner. He didn't want to bump heads with him. So, hey, I'll go down to light heavyweight. I'll win that strap. You win the strap at heavyweight. You know, we won't have to clash with each other. But unfortunately, we all know how it ended up working out with Cain Velasquez. He's injury prone. He lost his strap to Verdum. And, you know, it hasn't been the same situation. So now the opportunity comes back for Cormier to bounce up and take this super fight against Stipe. And if he wins the title, I mean, he's, you know, a multi belt holder in the UFC, which is rare, and it's something special these days, especially with winning the heavyweight strap and possibly, you know, obviously he has the light heavyweight strap already, but possibly winning the heavyweight strap, I should say. So it'd be something to be said for sure. I mean, Stipe has a ton of respect right now, and Cormier can rip that away from him, you know, with a huge upset win here over a guy like Stipe. I think it's going to be a tough fight. I think it's going to be way tougher than everybody thinks. I mean, that line skyrocketing up to 300 was ridiculous. I mean, let's not forget, even though Cormier is a smaller fighter here, the guy is a beast as far as he's the more technical wrestler of the two here. I think he's, as far as overall skill set goes, I think Cormier is probably the more complete mixed martial artist, but you cannot underestimate Stipe's game at all. I mean, and I'm not, I know that how hard the guy works, and I know, you know, his confidence level is at an all-time high right now. And with the, usually when you have two guys with similar skill set, the bigger fighter definitely has the advantage here. So Stipe does have several advantages in this fight. He's going to have the reach. He's got more pure knockout power in this fight as well. And of course the wrestling should neutralize each other out, you would think. So I am going to pick Stipe to win. I've never picked against the guy. I mean, from day one, and I probably won't ever. I mean, I have that much respect for the guy. He's just an amazing athlete, amazing fighter, and he deserves to be where he's at. But again, I would not count or underestimate Daniel Cormier in this spot. I think he's got some improved stand-up ability that people are probably counting out and underestimating a little bit. If you look what he did in his last fight against Ozdemir, I mean, we saw a guy in Ozdemir that was just kind of lighting everybody up, one punch knockout power, just destroying people on the feet. And Cormier went out there and outstruck him. I mean, he outstruck a striker, you know. I mean, obviously Cormier did more than just that, but still, I mean, that was impressive to see. He did some damage on the feet against Volkan. Before that, the John Jones loss that Cormier had, he was actually winning that fight. He was winning the stand-up exchanges. He was winning the striking battle against John Jones until he ate it. You know, I mean, obviously he got floored and, you know, he ended up losing that fight, but John Jones pulled that kick out of nowhere. And, you know, and again, I mean, now it's been ruled a no contest, so it doesn't look, you know, that bad on his resume. But that being said, the improvement of Cormier striking in that bout before he got caught and knocked out was really impressive. I mean, it was evident. So I think that what you're seeing here is a more confident Cormier that has proven, look, I got the wrestling background, but I'm not afraid to come in and start banging and be aggressive and knock people out either. So I think Cormier is going to come in here confident with his hands, and he's going to be pushing forward and trying to knock Stipe out. I mean, that's what he's going to do here. I know people are expecting a little bit of wrestling and maybe a path to victory to slow this fight down and maybe drag it in deep waters or whatnot from Cormier, but I could see it playing out where he wants to stand and bang with Stipe. He tries to get inside, closes that gap a little bit, and just, you know, tries to knock him out. So he is a dangerous fighter. Stipe has to respect that for sure. But with all that being said, I'm still going to side with the champion right now, the heavyweight champion, and Stipe Miocic. I think he is, like I said, an outstanding fighter. And, you know, I mean, if he can continue his reign, there's no question he'll go down as the greatest heavyweight. If he wins against a fighter like this, people can say what they want. Cormier is a light heavyweight or whatnot. I mean, the guy, let's not forget, he had so much success at heavyweight before he dropped down to light heavyweight as well. So Cormier can handle himself against heavyweights. This would be a great win on Stipe's resume. So the pick is Stipe to win in a very grueling and a hard-fought battle here against Cormier.
Yeah, Cormier absolutely belongs in the heavyweight division. This is not like some huge mismatch. Cormier beat Jeff Monson. He beat Antonio Silva. He beat Josh Barnett. He beat Frank Mir. He beat Roy Nelson, all at heavyweight. So I think that this is a perfectly acceptable bout, and I think it should be competitive. I mean, Stipe Miocic is going to be the bigger, stronger guy. Miocic, he's going to be 5 inches taller. He's going to have 8 inches in reach. So clearly, you know, Daniel Cormier is going to have his work cut out for him. But Cormier is going to have the speed. I think Cormier clearly, with his Olympic pedigree, should be the better wrestler. I mean, Miocic has some pretty underrated wrestling himself, and that should help him defensively, especially if Cormier tries to win this fight with takedowns. But realistically, I think Miocic should be a little bit concerned on the feet. I know Miocic has some good power, solid boxing fundamentals, but Cormier can step inside quickly and land some sharp combinations. And Miocic has been caught in the past. I mean, you still remember Overeem circling away and then just quick stepping in with a left hook and dropping Miocic in that title fight. So if Cormier can step in and catch Stipe out of nowhere, there's a very realistic possibility that he could hurt him and potentially finish him. So Miocic will have to be concerned about that. Miocic is going to have to be worried about getting put on his back. We really haven't seen him put on his back very much, but it's a realistic possibility here. Even though Miocic has excellent takedown defense, Cormier could be the guy to put him down. So I think this is going to be just a fascinating fight. Now, obviously, Stipe, if he can just stay in open space and land good, solid punches, then he's going to be in a good position. Cormier is getting older. Cormier's chin isn't quite what it used to be. He's been hurt repeatedly in fights. Gustafsson had him in huge trouble. John Jones knocked him out. Of course, Anthony Johnson dropped him with the first punch of their initial meeting. So Miocic definitely has the ability to finish Cormier at any point if he can connect. It's just all going to be about Cormier's speed and quickness and elusiveness and defense. And I think this is a thrilling battle, and I'm very excited to see how it plays out. But I am going to side with Stipe. I think, you know, with his size, that should really help him here. And with his offensive wrestling should really come in handy defensively, and that could fluster Cormier. But you never know. Cormier could definitely take him down. I mean, we're not going to know for sure until we see the fight play out. But I think Stipe's wrestling defense is going to hold up. But Cormier definitely is capable of putting him on his back and potentially keeping him there. So we'll see how the fight plays out. But I think the longer it goes, it'll favor Stipe, because Cormier is going to have to exert a lot more energy to try to get this fight to the floor and to try to stay with Stipe, the bigger, stronger guy. And I can see potentially Cormier starting strong and then wilting a little bit as this fight goes on, and Stipe catching him at some point. So I'm going to stick with Stipe Miocic, and I think that he does retain his UFC heavyweight championship. Now, before we go into our closing here, we're going to go very quick with a rundown of the Tough 27 finale. This is more going to be a quick pick. We're not going to really do a breakdown or anything. I'm just going to say the fight. Nick will say who he thinks is going to win, and I'll say who I think is going to win. And we're not really going to explain it. You're just going to have to take our word for it that we do know these guys, and that we did a little bit of work on this. We just didn't have time to get a full podcast for this one out. So for the Tough 27 finale, first fight on the card, Nick, Gerald Meerschaert versus Oscar Piahota.
Piahota open minus 215. The comeback on Meerschaert at plus 165 right now over at BetDSI. Piahota minus 235. The comeback on Meerschaert is plus 185. I'm going to go with the favorite here in Piahota.
And I'm going to agree with you. I think Piahota gets it done. Next up, we have featherweight battle, Matt Bissett against Steven Peterson.
Bissett open minus 180. The comeback on Peterson plus 140. Right now over at BetDSI, it's currently Bissett minus 145 and Peterson is plus 115. Really tough one, but I'm going to lean slightly towards Bissett.
And I'm going to side with Bissett as well. I just think that he's the better overall fighter here. Kicking off the preliminary card on Fox Sports 1 is a featherweight bout from featuring Tough 27 fighters Tyler Diamond and Bryce Mitchell.
Tyler Diamond open minus 150. The comeback on Mitchell plus 110. Right now I'm seeing minus 175 out there, and the comeback on Mitchell is at plus 145. So action coming in towards the wrestler and Diamond. I will go the other way. I know that Diamond has a lot of potential, but I like what I've seen in Mitchell as well. So I'll pick the underdog to pull off that win here in Mitchell.
Yeah, I think Mitchell survives the early storm from Diamond and gets the job done. So I'm going to side with Mitchell as well. Next up, we have a battle of Tough 27 fighters in John Gunther, who's 4-0, and Alan Zuniga, who's 13-0.
Zuniga open minus 130. The comeback on Gunther at minus 110. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's actually Gunther minus 163 plus 133 on Zuniga. So the line flipped. And I am going to go with Gunther as well.
And I completely agree with you again, going Gunther. Next up, another battle of Tough 27 fighters, Luis Pena, who's 4-0, and Richie Smolin, who is 3-0-1.
Looking forward to this fight. Luis Pena opened -290, Smolin opened at +210, and right now looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Pena at -343, the comeback on Smolin at +263. I think the line's a little high, but I'll lean a little bit more towards Pena in this fight.
And I completely agree. I'm going with Violet Bob Ross, Luis Pena. Last bout on the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a women's flyweight contest between Montana De La Rosa, who's 8-4, and Rachel Ostovich, who's 4-3.
De La Rosa opened -120. Ostovich opened -120. So exactly a pick 'em. The betting public kind of bet the lineup, where De La Rosa right now over at BetDSI is -170. The comeback on Ostovich is +140. I think they're on the right track there. I'm going to agree. I think De La Rosa probably gets the job done here.
Yeah, and I'm going to slightly disagree. I think Ostovich has slightly better wrestling, and I'm going to side with her. Next up, we have the Fox Sports 1 main card, kicking off with a middleweight contest between Alessio De Chirico, who is 11-1, and Julian Marquez, who is 7-1.
Marquez opened -210, De Chirico opened +160, right now over at BetDSI. It is currently Marquez at -156, De Chirico is at +126. So line margins have tightened up, and there is a drop in the price, more action coming in De Chirico's way. I'll go the other way with it, though. I think it is going to be a great fight, but I'm going to pick Marquez to win.
Yep, and I'll go the other way from Nick. I'm going to side with De Chirico. I do think this is going to be a close battle as well, and it could be a pick'em. Next up, women's flyweight contest. Roxanne Modafferi, who is 21-15, taking on Barb Honchak, who is 10-4.
Honchak opened -170, Modafferi +130 right now. At DSI, it's currently -183 for Honchak. Modafferi's at +153, so staying close to the opener. I'm going to lean slightly towards Honchak as well. Again, another spot where I'm expecting a competitive fight, but I think Honchak is going to do it just barely enough to get by here in this fight.
Honchak is capable of winning, but I'm going to side with Modafferi. I think that she's improved enough to get the job done in the rematch. Next up, we have a bantamweight bout, or actually a featherweight bout, between Alex Caceres, who is 13-11 with 1-0 contest, taking on Martin Bravo, who is 12-1.
Caceres opened -135, Bravo at -105. And right now, line staying pretty steady. It's -135 for Caceres at BetDSI, and the comeback is +105 on Bravo. Another tough one. Both have a lot of similar skill sets, but I got to lean with the experience of Caceres here.
Yeah, and I'm going Caceres as well. Experience definitely is the key for me. Now we have the Tough 27 finale for featherweight, in Jay Cuccinello, who is 9-0, taking on Brad Katona, who's 7-0.
This line was pretty fresh, recently opened up at -145 for Katona, and the comeback on Cuccinello was at +105. But right now, the line margin has tightened up, and it's skyrocketed up to, at DSI, it's -245 for Katona, and the comeback on Cuccinello is at +195. I am going to lean that way as well. I think Katona is just a little bit better as a fighter as a whole, and I think he's going to probably edge this fight out.
Yep, I'm going to side with the public action as well, and side with Katona, who actually earned this without losing on the show, like Cuccinello did. And last of the tough fights, we have the lightweight finale, who is Michael Trezano, who is 7-0, and Joe Giannetti, who is also 7-0.
This fight opened with Giannetti at -120, Trezano at -120, exactly a pick 'em. General action has forced Giannetti up. Right now it's Giannetti -170, the comeback on Trezano at +140. I am going to go the other way. I think that a lot of people are picking Giannetti. I understand why they would, but I'm going to go the other way. I think Trezano's being a little bit disrespected. If he doesn't lose by submission, he probably wins. So Trezano is my pick.
And I do think Trezano loses by submission. Giannetti's looked like an unstoppable submission force on the show so far, and I think he keeps it up. So I'm going to side with Giannetti. And last but not least, we have Brad Tavares in the main event middleweight contest. He is 18-5, taking on Israel Adesanya, who is 13-0.
Fight open exactly a pick 'em, -120 either way. Adesanya -120, Tavares -120. Right now, it's actually It was up to Adesanya actually climbing towards 200. Right now we're seeing it back down to where it basically opened at minus 115 either way at DSI. So Adesanya's minus 115 and Tavares is minus 115. Very tough fight. I'm a huge fan of Adesanya. I just think, again, when you want to talk about experience, you got to lean a little bit more towards Tavares. I think if he does not get knocked out, if Adesanya does not catch him, Tavares probably does win on the scorecards or eventually gets a finish as well, because obviously this is going to be a five rounder, and it's five rounds, a long way to go when you have guys that are capable like this of finishing and having that much knockout power or whatnot and finishing ability. So I think Tavares edges him out, but it should be a good fight.
Yep, I'm in complete agreement. Tavares is the more overall skilled fighter. Adesanya is the scarier striker, and Tavares does have some chin and durability issues, but I'm going to side with Tavares as well. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 226 and our picks for UFC for the Ultimate Fighter 27 finale. If we have a free play for either event to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.